yard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Air Force.
Yo! And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest, blackest, and funniest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. I'm coming straight from the side, going down right here on Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. I am Joseph Ward, the coolest, the magnificent, the one and only. You better recognize, don't leave your wife around me, because I will take her. Because everybody knows that Joe's got holes. And everybody knows that the hoes love Joe's. Let me stop. Hey, man, it's really going down. Another episode of the Fix Sports Podcast. I believe this episode 10. I think so. I've been messing up all my numbers this season, but it don't matter because I've been having fun. Been getting it in, and we back with this video this week. Last week we had a little internet issues. I don't know. A CenturyLink internet is trash. You can tell them I said it. CenturyLink's internet is garbage. All right, I need me a discount for all that bullshit y'all been doing to me. But back for another episode during this corona quarantine outbreak, stay at home time stuff that we got going on here in the month of April, really going down. There are no live sports going on right now. No live sports, so people got to be creative. And like I've been saying from the jump, though, if you can't be creative in this time, if you can't find some good things to talk about, if you can't have no good shows, then you weren't good from the beginning. Yeah, you weren't good from the beginning. So before we get deep into, before we get down all up into the Who Shot John that's going over on down the Fix Sports Podcast, I do want to remind folk that you can support the Fix Sports Podcast on Patreon by visiting patreon.com/thefix. You can donate as little as $1 a day to help the Fix Sports Podcast, you know, just support us and fun, help us get the things that we need to continue and to grow. You hear me? So once again, that's patreon.com/thefix. All my Fix Sports Podcast fans, whether you're listening to this on your favorite podcast platform or you're watching the video via Patreon, because remember there's a video component to this where you can see me being all willy-nilly, right? And so to see the video, you got to be a patron on Patreon. So that's patreon.com/thefix. You hear me? Remember that on the Freedom Train Network, upcoming we have our Black Movie Playoff that's going down NCAA bracket style. Since we ain't got no March Madness on NCAA tournament, we decided to do a Black Movie tournament. And so we taking the NCAA brackets and we filling in with the movies. And we're going to go through and see who at what movie is the greatest black movie of all time. So pay attention to our social media. On Facebook, we are Freedom Train Network. Instagram, Freedom Train Network. Twitter, Freedom Train Net. You visit our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. You can, that's it. YouTube. Check out our YouTube channel, Freedom Train Network YouTube channel, where we got some information. We got clips. We dropped the clips from when we worked our way through our brackets and our movies and where we are now. So stay up to date with us, man, because we letting y'all know we're going to be dropping these actual podcasts on y'all so y'all can start joining in with us when we talk about what's the greatest black movie of all time. So www.freedomtrainradio.com, make sure y'all keep up with us. And remember, the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go through the African History Book Series, the African History Blog, the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History Curriculum app, which is available on the website at www.ontheshouldersone.com, the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, the On the Shoulders of Giants online courses, which is available on Patreon at patreon.com/OTSOG. And also contact On the Shoulders of Giants, of course, when it's quarantine time now and it's corona lockdown, but you can get information digitally or face-to-face. In a regular climate, you can get it face-to-face, but, you know, digital. So visit the website, www.ontheshouldersone.com. Information can be shared through your smartphone, smart TV, smart board in your classroom, your tablet, your desktop, your laptop, all that. www.ontheshouldersone.com. The information is available. And if you don't know, now you know. Hey, we got a good show today. Definitely got a good show today. So let's go ahead and do the rundown. So, HBCU Spotlight. Because, you know, there's no active sports, so we got to be creative in finding our spotlight. But Hank Aaron and Bethune-Cookman College will be in the spotlight today because Hank Aaron blessed Bethune-Cookman College, or Bethune-Cookman University, excuse me. That's the FAMU in me. But Hank Aaron blessed Bethune-Cookman University with a pretty sizable donation, according to the headline. So we're going to see. HBCU news is that the CIAA Rookie of the Year for football has decided to transfer out, and we're going to be nosy and find out why the hell but it's transferring out. Depending on how much time we have, we're going to talk about Shaquille O'Neal. Reportedly, Shaquille O'Neal offered Isaiah Ryder, J.R. Ryder, $10,000 to fight Kobe Bryant during their time together as Lakers. That's funny. That's real funny. If that's true, that's real funny. Once again, depending on how much time we have, we'll talk about the greatest NBA team of all time. That's something I was looking at earlier today. There was a poll on Yahoo Sports, and you know they went through to see what was the greatest NBA team of all time. So we'll talk about that. We have a guest today. Got a guest. It's not necessarily Life After Sports because this is our yearly interview here on the Freedom Train Network with our dear friend, Miss Erica Camardi. We just like to interview her. So we interview her every year, and bam, she's on the Fix Sports Podcast today. We're going to talk about her. If you don't know about Miss Erica Camardi, she's the head basketball coach of the Florida A&M University High School Women's High School Girls Basketball Team, and for the past 5 years, she's gotten her team to the state tournament. She won 3 in a row out the gate, and even this year, she got the team to the championship game that fell short. But she's a successful coach, and I've been knowing her for a long time, so we always have our yearly podcast where we sit down and chop it up. So it's really going down like that today. And then our weekly rant will be at the whole situation surrounding ex-NFL player Chris Johnson, the running back Chris Johnson, 2,000 yards in one season, Chris Johnson, who's accused of a murder-for-hire shooter for somebody that shot him and killed one of his friends. So we're going to dig a little deep into that, get a little rant on about all of that stuff, because, you know, it's like, what the hell is going on between the sheets and my home? Maybe let me explain. I don't know. I don't know how the hell we get here, but it's time for the HBCU Spotlight, champion. Shine that light. yours look like mine.
I let it go alone.
I'm sorry. For that HBCU spotlight test. I got caught up in that music this year. I missed my cue. I got caught up in the music, but I brought it back. So, HBCU spotlight is shining at Bethune-Cookman University and the legendary home run king, Hank Aaron. So, Hank Aaron, along with his wife, along with HBCU alumni, just made a sizable investment in Bethune-Cookman University. Really going down. So, Hammer and Hank Aaron hasn't played baseball in more than 40 years, but Hammer and Hank Aaron, which, you know, I added the first Hammer and Hank and then the actual next Hammer and Hank in the actual article, so that's why I decided to Hammer and Hank two times, but you know. But he just hit another one out of the park. Right. The Baseball Hall of Famer and one-time home run king is helping out Bethune-Cookman in a big way by coming up with a sizable donation. Dun, dun, dun! Let's see what this is all about. Aaron and his wife, Billy, donated $250,000 to the school individually. So that's $50,000 together, B. That's $50,000 together from the Aaron family, from the Aaron family. Aaron's foundation, Chasing the Dream, donated another $104,000 to the school. Damn! So that's like $154,000 they donated to the school, B. No. Yeah. That's a lot of money. Hold up, $500,000, and then $100,000. That's $600,000. I'm tripping. My math was off. So that's $600,000. The Aaron's a long time fundraisers for the United Negro College Fund. We are pleased to support. We are pleased to provide support for the achievements of young people with limited opportunities and enable them to develop their talents and pursue their dreams. That's a statement by the Aarons. That's just a mixture of both Hank and his wife's voice, even though that's horrible. But the Aarons said in a joint statement via News Journal, alumni Joyce Moorhead and her husband Thomas also came up with the $250,000 donation to the school. So that's close to $800,000. If it ain't $800,000 already that they donate, they almost dropped $1 million on this school now. As a proud graduate of BCU, I owe much of my personal professional success to the training and nurturing I received as a student at Bethune-Cookman. And that was the statement by Joyce Moorhead. We hope that this gift will likewise inspire other alumni philanthropists to support all HBCUs, but particularly Bethune-Cookman. The gifts come a few months after BCU President Brent Christie said the school's future was threatened by a sizable budget gap. And look at that. Black people stood up. Black people said, hold up. BCU in trouble? Let's go ahead and donate to go ahead and make sure we say BCU. Now, other HBCUs, other black folk, hey, man, if we work together, you know how live this thing could be? You know how many more resources and how much more we could produce out of our community if we actually work together? I'm just saying. So, y'all know how we do over here, man. We always got to make sure we give our props. Got to make sure we let people know what's going on. So y'all go ahead and y'all put y'all hands together for Hammer and Hank Aaron and his wife, Miss Billy Aaron. Y'all give it up for Joyce Moorhead. All right. So dropping that money. Gotta drop that money. Gotta drop that money. If you ain't got no money, then you can't drop it. But that's what's up, though, man. The Aaron family, they dropped They dropped, so Hank, once again, Hank Aaron dropped 250 by himself. His wife, Billy Aaron, dropped 250 by herself, so that's 500,000. Then the nonprofit, the foundation, dropped 104,000. So that's 604,000. And then Joyce Moorhead dropped 250. That's $850,000. They almost dropped $1 million on BCU, man. It don't get no better than that. It don't get no better than that. That's how we survive, man. That's how we, matter of fact, that's how we do more to survive. That's how we thrive at these HBCUs. That's how we keep things going. We got to fund ourselves, man. We got to do for self, by self. And if we ain't doing for us like we're supposed to do for us, then we can't complain about not having, because it ain't our enemy's job to do it for us. You white folk ain't going to do it for us, man. They ain't going to do it for us. We got to do it for ourselves. So this is just another reminder, man. Spotlight shine on Mr. Hammer and Hank Aaron, his wife, Billy Aaron, Joyce Myers. I mean, Joyce Moorhead really going down. I don't know who Joyce Myers, a white church lady. I don't know. But that's what's up, though. Shout out to the Aaron family. Shout out to Joyce Moorhead. Shout out to BCU. Shout out to all the HBCUs, because that there has been our HBCU. For that HBCU spotlight, that share historically black colleges and universities. And we know which one is the best one, fam. You, where we get love to all of them. I said HBCU spotlight, that share. I said HB. When I say see you, I say that HB gon' see you. Spotlight, that's yeah. All right, almost got carried away, B. But I'm here. All right, so it's time for our HBCU news. You heard me? So there's a Johnson C. Smith. The school will have a big hole in its back seat, in its backfield when football returns. I read that horribly, but I was trying to read two things at one time. So, like I said, the CIAA Rookie of the Year looks to transfer out of his school, and apparently he's the running back for Johnson C. Smith, right? So, Emmanuel Wilson, the reigning CIAA Offensive Rookie of the Year, announced via Twitter that he would not be coming back to play on the Beatty's Ford Road next season. Playing on Beatty's Ford Road next season. I don't know nothing about Johnson C. Smith, so I think that's in Charlotte. With a heavy heart, this is Emmanuel Wilson. This is the young man. So, with a heavy heart, I would like to announce that I will be transferring from Johnson C. Smith University in hopes of finding a program that will help me foster my education and align my true potential as an individual and player. Come on, give it up. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, what a transfer. Oh, what a transfer. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So that's the tweet he sent. I just added the dramatic because it's fun, right? So the rookie Virginia native rushed for 1,040 yards and 13 touchdowns, both good for third in the conference as a rookie. So first time on the field, right? He ran for 265 yards in his second career game against Benedict, scoring on rounds of 83, 73, and 64 yards for Johnson C. Smith. He also had a stellar game against Fayetteville State, in which he rushed for 195 yards and three touchdowns. So it's a tough blow for Johnson C. Smith, but head coach Kermit Blunt has a knack for finding great running backs, so he surely got something else in the tank. So I'm guessing this young man, Emmanuel Wilson, looking at his production, 1,040 yards, and like, hey, man, I can do that on the bigger stage. Bro, I got 1,000 yards, bro. 1,000. I bet you I could do that on the big stage. I bet you I could play Clemson or UNC or NC State or some shit like that, bro. You know what I'm talking about? I got 1,040 yards. Who else out here getting 1,040? Nobody. Nobody else in the country rushed for 1,040 yards. But me. So, therefore, I'm taking my talents elsewhere, my brother. After this Rona over, after this Corona over, I'm taking my talents elsewhere, bro. I didn't just get 1,000 yards. I got 1,040. 13 touchdowns, B. Who else got that? Who else in the country got that? Nobody. I'm out of here, Johnson C. Smith. I'm out of here. So that's what running back Emmanuel Smith is doing. Emmanuel Wilson, excuse me. Johnson C. Smith at the school. Young man's name is Emmanuel Wilson. So, We will keep our eye on Mr. Wilson to see where he's going. But that's HBCU news, man. Just want to let y'all know that the CIA Rookie of the Year is transferring out of Johnson C. Smith and looking to go play somewhere else. You think you want to come to FAMU? We don't know. You think you want to go to Clemson? We don't know. We just know he's getting up out of Johnson C. Smith. So, hey, we're going to see about that. Hey, so I came across this article as I was getting my show together, right? I came across this article on Google talking about one of the hiccups in Shaq and Kobe's relationship. And the headline caught my eye. How it's not going to catch your eye, right? Shaq O'Neal offered Isaiah Ryder $10,000 to fight Kobe Bryant during time at the lake. So when you see something like that, you're like, bruh, I gotta see what's up with this. And this is stemming from J.R. Ryder on the All the Smoke podcast with Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes. Shout out to Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes with the All the Smoke podcast, Showtime and everything that they got going on. Them brothers doing a good job over there, and I like what they're doing. So, you know, when two real ones hook up and do a podcast, you got to check it out and give it praise, all right? So, let me read this to you. So, during their time as teammates on the Los Angeles Lakers, Shaquille O'Neal and the late Kobe Bryant certainly had their fair share of tension. The pair played together on the Lakers from 96 to 04, winning three consecutive NBA championships. But their relationship off the court was bitter. In a recent interview on Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes' podcast, All the Smoke, Isaiah Ryder shared a story that highlights just how bad the feud was between the two Lakers stars. When Ryder joined the Lakers in 2001, O'Neal told Ryder that he had $10,000 in cash, and he would give him it to him if he fought Bryant during one of the team practices. The proposal came just 3 days into Ryder's tenure as a Lakers player. Here's Ryder telling, and this is an excerpt of the alleged incident that was explained by J.R. Ryder, allegedly, right? When I first got to the Lakers, Shaq tells me, if you and Kobe get into it, it's 10 G's in the locker. This is 3 days in the practice. I'm like, man, come on, you playing me, man. There's 10 G's and $1 bills. If you ever get into it and you handle your business, grab that. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, man, these boys are crazy, bro. But this is my thing. I would have been off this team so fast that I would have laid my if I would have laid my hands on that man. And Isaiah Ryder, you made the smart decision. You made a smart decision, right? 10 G's and ones ain't worth it, though. Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant managed to mend their fractured relationship after they both retired from basketball, but Ryder's story is a sign of how bad things once were between the Lakers dynamic duo. So that's crazy. That's funny, but I don't put that past Shaq. I ain't going to lie to you. I ain't even going to put that past Shaq. That sounds like something Shaq would do. So I actually have to go check out this episode of All the Smoke. I watched the show. I don't remember this this particular. Oh well, it must be recent because I can see they're all in three different locations. So it's during this Corona time. So it got to be recent. So but that's crazy. But I don't even put that past Shaq. Think about it. and this is 2001. This is one of the teams that's considered one of the greatest NBA teams of all time. Because remember, this 2001 Lakers team went 15-1 in the playoffs, and they just ran through everybody in the season and in the playoffs. And the only game they lost was game one of the NBA Finals against Allen Iverson. So it's even crazy for that request to be made during that time, but Shaq trying to set that man up, man. Shaq trying to get J.R. Ryder kicked off the team and messed up and all out the league trying to fight Kobe because he don't like Kobe. Nah, Shaq, you got beef with Kobe, Shaq? You fight Kobe. That's a crazy story. That's one of the interviews and stories I wish I would have got. I wish he was on this podcast and I could get that story because I have all types of stuff. Like, bro, what was going through your head when Shaq offered you $10,000 in ones to fight Kobe because he got beef with Kobe because he don't like Kobe. And Shaq gonna offer that man that money. That's crazy, bro. I don't know why I said that like that. That's crazy, man. But it's not unbelievable though. For me, that's really not unbelievable to think that Shaq would offer somebody $10,000 to fight Kobe. That's really not unbelievable to me, though. Now, especially at that time with those two, the way they went at each other, the vitriol that they had for each other at that time, Shaq and Kobe. But now, that year surprises me. That happening that particular year surprises me, but those two going at it and going through it, that don't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me that Shaq would offer something like that. Kobe done snitched on Shaq. Shaq done did stuff like this. It's amazing that they won the way they won. That show you talent, man, and all the other stuff there. But it's amazing that they won. They actually won three in a row with those. That toxic off-the-court relationship. I guess they had to compartmentalize some things or something, but it's crazy that to hear stories, to hear Isaiah Ryder come out and tell the story, that's something we've never heard before, too. That's the story about Shaq and Kobe. At least I've never heard that story. I've heard a lot of stories about Shaq and Kobe. I watch a lot of sports things on YouTube, on whatever platform, ESPN, Fox Sports 1, whatever. I watch a lot of sports. I'm a historian. I'm an actual historian, and sports is a part of the history that I cover. And so that's something for me. That's a treasure. That's a treasure for me because I've never heard that story of Shaq offering J.R. Ryder $10,000 to fight Kobe Bryant. That is crazy. So, like I said, it's amazing that they even won the games that they won with that type of tension going on court. But anyway, man, I want to drop that story off on y'all real quick because that's a headline that I come across as I was getting my show together that Kobe Bryant, I mean, was rather Shaq offering J.R. Ryder $10,000 to fight Kobe Bryant. So that's, like I said, that story is told on on the J.R. Ryder or Isaiah Ryder, whatever you want to call them, the J.R. Ryder episode of the All the Smoke podcast with Matt Barnes and Stephen Jackson. All right, so It's time to transition in this podcast. Like I said, we got a special guest. We got a yearly guest, a family member of the Freedom Train Network, but also right here on the Fix Sports Podcast. She's a three-time state champion in women's basketball here in high school basketball here in the state of Florida. She's three-time coach of the year. She's taken her team to at least the state finals at least 5 years in a row. She's been the winner since day one. She continues to win. And just every season, she finds a way to put her team in the right position to win. Not only is she balling on the court, but off the court, she's making a big difference within the community. She's someone that you will definitely want your daughters to look up to. She has experience playing high school basketball, where she actually played at the school she coaches at. She was a baby lady rattler herself at the Florida at the FAMU DRS High School. She went on to Miles College to play college basketball, and then came back home, got a chance to get her coaching start at Crossroads Academy, then went on to FAMU DRS, and is now putting it down. So I want everybody to make sure that you all put your hands together and clap loud. I'm talking about clap real, real, real loud, and make sure that I want you to put all your energy and your spirit in it for Miss Erica Cromartie. Welcome to the Fix Sports Podcast.
Thank you so much,
Joe,
as always.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Welcome back. Welcome back. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Man, this, you know, it's always good to talk to you on this podcast, on this network, period, because you always bring good information, good energy, and we always like to learn new things from you, especially on your journey. It's kind of like, I kind of feel like this is our audio part of helping to document your journey that you're going on, because you're doing some incredible things on and off the court. So we just like to be able to be a part of it. So we thank you for everything that you're doing.
I thank you, like always. I appreciate you having me on every year. So a shout out to you as well for even doing that.
No problem, no problem. Like I said, it feel like an audio documentary to me. So it's we definitely look forward to it every year. So for, and before we get into it, I know we have some new listeners who may not have heard some of our interviews in the past, and we do encourage you, all our listeners, to go back and listen to the interviews we had with Ms. Cromartie in the past. Can you give a little brief intro of yourself and give a little background information for those who may not know who you are?
Okay, yeah, similar to what you stated earlier, I ascended FAMU DRS, graduated 2001, and then after that I went to Miles College on a basketball scholarship, played there from 2001 to 2005, and then I came back to Tallahassee and attended Florida State University, majored in physical education, and then I started teaching and coaching at Crossroad Academy. And then after that, I transitioned to FAMU DRS, and I started teaching and coaching there. And then I also attended FAMU and majored in sport management. And I've been at FAMU DRS since 2012.
Okay. All right. All right. So when it comes to coaching and success and just life, period, for you specifically, as a high school basketball coach, what do you think has been like one of your or the biggest contributor to your continued success as a high school basketball coach?
I think first of all, just of course putting God first and knowing that you can't do it by yourself, and also I think just understanding how the game is played and how the young girls are. I think once you have those two things in line, I think everything else will fall in place. And you got to know how to work with people and also work for people and also just kind of be selfless, because you got to know that it's not about you, it's about what you're doing for others.
Right, right. So, and especially like when you're talking about understanding your girls,
right,
specifically, because it's a difference coaching guys and girls. There are similarities, but there are differences, and both can exist at
right.
the same time.
Right.
But But as a woman coming, you know, there's an age difference between the young girls. The world has changed. It hasn't changed so much. Being a woman hasn't changed totally. But what are some of the things that you had to learn about this generation girls that has helped you be able to connect with them?
Oh, that's a good question. I think just understanding where they are, you know, sometimes you can try to be to the point where you're too far from them. I feel like you have to meet them where they are. And then once you do that, you can kind of not really change them, but kind of tweak them to things that you probably think they should be doing or learning. But once they realize you care about them and you understand what they're going through, I think that's the biggest part of it, because then they'll trust you and then they'll know that, you know, she really wants me to be successful on and off the court. So it's more so just reaching them where they are, because like you said, every generation is different. Every team, every player is different.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and see, mm-hmm. we're going to get into that further in the interview because somehow you found the reason to, you found a way to adapt as a coach. Your right. adaptability is on display because the continued success. So far, we have nobody seen a drop-off in your success starting from Crossroads to where you are now. And see, a lot of people, mm-hmm. I've had the privilege of seeing your success start at Crossroads. And
right.
so for me, it's, you know, for a better part of a decade, you've been successful. And so that, to me, that's something that a lot of people don't do. You don't see that often. When you do see it, you have to praise it. You want to make sure you kind of document it as much as possible to be able to show others. So, So with that being said, for this year's team, what was one of the biggest obstacles you had to overcome to actually reach the state championship game again?
That's a good one. This year's team was, I would say, they were very diverse. I think in the beginning of the season, we had to kind of gel and feel each other out. And honestly, I feel like this team, they got better as the season went on. I think they needed reps, and I think they needed to just kind of play together, because a lot of the girls, most of the girls was on the team last year, but this year they had different roles. So we needed a lot more from them, and I think they had to grow into their roles. But I got to say, I thank God that we peaked at the right time, because when we started playing better basketball was when it was really, you know, important, and that was like towards the season and on to the playoffs. So okay. I think this team was just very diverse, because they gel, and they had to understand their different roles.
Okay. And what was the team's overall record?
I gotta look back at our schedule.
Okay.
But I want to say, the top of my head, I think we finished like 20-8. I think that's what it was.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I asked that, because I remember last year's team, the regular season record wasn't as desired, but when the playoffs came, that team went on the run. And
true.
That team was able to kind of pull it together. So this year's team kind of went into the playoffs with a better overall record.
Right, they did. We played very well this year. For the most part of it. I mean, we had games that I felt like we left some basketball on the court, like saying there's games we should have won, but then there's games that we won that I was really proud of them about. So I think, like I said, this year they came together at the right time.
Right, right. Now that's good. That's good. So, like I said, you've experienced a lot of success in your first. This is your fifth year at FAMU, coaching at FAMU High, correct?
Mhm.
Okay, so you know, 5 years of success. And when I was getting the interview together, this question was like at the top of my mind. But expectations going into your fifth year. Well, now you'll be going to your sixth year right. coming up. So, for you as a coach, how do you manage your expectations of winning? And at the same time, being able to push your players the right way to get the best out of them. So how do you manage that to be able to have your expectations but still be able to get the best out of your players?
I mean, I think it starts with me and my coaching staff. I think we have to demand that from the beginning, and they have to see, like, what we want and what we're fitting to do. Because I feel like if you don't, then they don't – first of all, they don't know the goal, and they don't know how far they can go. So I think you have to have that from the beginning. You have to make sure you demonstrate yourself, within yourself, the goals you're trying to reach as a team and how you want the girls to carry themselves. And I think my coaches and I, we do a great job of demonstrating that. And then I think once the players see it and they hear it all the time, then they know, like, okay, this is what we got to do. This is how they expect us to play, and this is how we got to do it. Now, I won't say they win every game, but they do come out with the expectation of knowing that, okay, this is what we're looking for.
Right. Because
you're just
saying
the tone from the beginning.
Right, exactly. If you can do that, because expectation is big for, especially for sports, but just overall in life, expectation is big because it's like if I expect to win, I'm coming and play differently from a team who just expects to just be there. Okay.
Right.
Now that's, but, and then it's, you can see clearly, your expectations are rubbing off on your players because, like I said, the continued success that you have. So,
yeah, and that's a testament of them, too. Like, they buying in and reaching their goals because, I mean, that's huge for them. I think I said before, the interview before, to see them be successful is the biggest part of it. I mean, that's why you coach anyway.
Right. Definitely. Their success is your success, and your success is their success. It's that relationship. So, still focusing on this year's team, from your opinion, what's different about this year's team as opposed to last year's team? And for you as a coach, what did you learn new as a coach from this year's team?
This year's team, like I said earlier, they first of all, this year's team was very athletic. I don't think I mentioned that. Mm-hmm. They were very athletic. I mean, we had girls that could get it. Like, they played, and they were athletic, and they kind of understood the game. So I think this year's team was more athletic than some of the teams that I had in the past. I think my first year's team was extremely athletic, but I think this will be the second best athletic team I've had. They are young. They were very young, but they grew up. Like I said before, they grew up at the right time. And I knew coming into this season that I had to kind of coach this team a little differently. I can recall, like, in the beginning of the season, it's a play that I always try to get them to put the run. And we tried it in the game, and they were kind of confused. And one of the girls was like, "Coach, can we just kind of tweak it and kind of just do a little different?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, if it worked, we're going to see." And it worked. And so, and just in that moment, she showed me, like, okay, well, they're out there in it, and they're giving me a suggestion, right. And it worked. So, and I said that to say, you know, that play that I drew up for this year's team, it probably didn't kind of work for them, and it worked for the team in the past, but they tweaked it in their own, and it worked for the way they wanted it to work.
Right. Now, that's big, because, well, like you said, it's the great part about that is, you know, you not having an ego to say, well, you have to run this play like I want to run it. Like you just said, they out there in it, so they know exactly. So let me ask this first. From this year's team, because you say this team is young, so how many players would you lose from this year's team going into next year?
I'll lose two seniors, two guards. And matter of fact, one of them is playing a basketball scholarship at Commerce University.
Okay. That's big. So the majority of your team is coming back next year.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's scary. That's scary for your opponents. Because listening to you describe the team, a young team who's athletic, but also as the year goes on, the team grows up, but you can also see that they're cerebral enough because they understand that the X's and O's of the game, clearly that between their maturation to high school and through what you're teaching them, they've become cerebral enough in the game. So So at that moment when you're in that space with this young player and you're drawing up this play and you're getting them to run mm-hmm. this play, the way you're drawing it up not necessarily working. But then when this player comes to you to tweak it, like, what's going through your mind when you're evaluating the player as he's telling you this?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, first of all, when they was trying to do it, they was trying to do what I asked them to do, and it just wasn't working. And in my head, I'm like, it ain't working. And so when I called a timeout, and actually, she's one of the leaders of the team. She's been with me for about 3 years now. I could just see the honesty in her voice and her tone, like, coach, look, you know, we're trying to do this, but it's just not working. Can we just do the other thing you showed us last time? And when you're a competitor, you're a coach, you like, well, shoot, yeah, let's just see it. And shoot, if it worked, you're going to go with that. But if it didn't, then we would have changed it. But actually, it worked, what we changed too. And it was more simple than what I had drew up. So that's why I said this year's team was a little different than teams in the past. Some teams in the past probably would have killed the first play I did, probably because their personnel was different. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Not in a bad way, just different players. But this year, team, I mean, once we changed the play, we took off after that.
Right. So let me ask you this, because you made a good point about personnel. All personnel would be different, and you can't expect every team to do the same exact thing. So, as a coach, how do you remove yourself or remove your ego or your thoughts about a specific play that you knew have worked for a long time? How do you remove that out of the way to actually either humble yourself to a thought that you have, a thought that the other coach have, or a thought that the player has? Like, how does that happen for you?
Well, I mean, it goes back to kind of like you said, just knowing your personnel. Like, you can't expect a player to do something that they haven't, first of all, they probably haven't practiced or they're just not comfortable doing. I mean, you can't just pull a rabbit out of the hat. They got to understand what you're trying to do. And not saying that team didn't, it's just they're just uncomfortable in that setting. So what we changed it to was something that we knew that they could do well. And it worked. I mean, you got to change stuff with different teams. It can't be the same way every time. Like, my coaching style has to change at times with different players.
Right. Okay. So, from this year's team, right, you had two players that were named All Big Ben First Team, which is a great achievement. So, that means you had two real ballers on your squad. So,
and one that was on my mention as well.
Okay. See, they didn't even mention that. All right. So two that made the team, one that's honorable mention. All right. Congratulations to those ladies, right? Mm-hmm. So, as a coach, how does their achievements make you feel, and how does that achievement, in your opinion, help them moving forward in their future?
First of all, for one of them that did make it, Batista Taylor, I think, she worked hard all season. Not saying the other ones didn't, but just her in particular, she worked hard all season. And she came back from a knee surgery.
Uh-huh.
So to see her accomplish that was really big. I mean, she gives us everything she has. I mean, she was one of the leaders on the team this year, and she gave it her all. So to see that was remarkable for her. The other one was Amiri Logan. Amir has been with me since she came from Cobb. So she came young, and she was a part of that team that went to state her first year. So she's kind of had experience with me. So to see her, because I think last year she made second team or third team. So to see her make first team this year, and she played majority of the season with a banged up shoulder. So to see her make it is remarkable. And also the mention player, Alex Reddick. She's in the 10th grade. I mean, she's coming along pretty good. She was she played a lot of minutes last year as a freshman, so you could just kind of see the development and the increase of their skill level as they get older. And like I said, that part right there is remarkable because, you know, sometimes players got to see the fruits of their labor. You can ride them. You can make them do this, make them do that. But if they don't ever see anything out of it, they're going to feel like it's in vain. But for them to see right. it and to see the results of it, I think that's pretty big.
Right, right. So how does – I know this is for me. How does reaching or being named to all Big Ben teams or any kind of like all-time team or whatever – from your time as a player and as a coach, how do you see that impact on recruiting and helping them getting to college? Like, does it really help?
It does. It does. I remember, I think I was first team in like 1999, and mm-hmm. I was one of them. And some of the college coaches seen that. And so when they seen that, it was like, oh, okay, it gives you kind of like a boost. I mean, but there's some players that didn't make the first or second or third team that are good players as well. But I right. still think being recognized as that, it does kind of set you apart a little bit, and it also gives you a little boost with recruiting.
Okay. All right. So speaking of recruiting a bit, because now we're in different times. We live in different right now due to this coronavirus.
Right.
Luckily, you guys were able to complete your all season before this
yes,
whole thing happened.
Yes, Lord, yes.
So far, or after the coronavirus is happening, because, you know, we got to practice social distancing and all these things here, but luckily we do have technology in place to still make things
right.
happen. So for your program, how has coronavirus impacted your interaction with current and returning players, and how has it impacted you getting new players since we're in this new time?
Right. I haven't physically seen any of the girls since we left before spring break, but I did reach out
right.
to my captain, and I sent a message through her to the girls just telling them, you know, that I'm, you know, thinking about them, that hope for them to be safe and to, and all of it, not do their work, but just make sure they stay safe and, you know, practice social distancing. So to mm-hmm. physically see them, I haven't in a while. And usually at this time at the school is when the college schools are out, and most of the girls
right.
from previous seasons, they'll come to the school. They'll, you know, show up their face, or they'll come work out. So I'm missing that part of seeing the older girls. But, you know, it'll get back right. I think with recruiting, how social media is, I think that'll help out. And,
right.
you know, that'll kind of help us out, because you can still post accomplishments. You can still post things about the team or the school that they could see. So, I mean, you still got to kind of work in the avenue that you can work at this point, really.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. That's why those who are technologically savvy do have an edge on those who aren't at this point
right
now.
Right.
Yeah. So, and hoping things move forward, I mean, yeah, hoping things get back to normal soon, but coronavirus, no matter what, it's going to have some type of impact, some type of change on the way we live. But specifically
oh, yeah.
the game of women's basketball, how do you think it will impact women's basketball moving forward?
Well, actually, now would be the WNBA draft will be coming up like next week, but I think I've seen
okay.
that they're not going to do it, of course, but I'm not sure if they're going to even do it via satellite. I'm not sure, but I think it would have been
mm-hmm.
this week coming, and it's kind of sad, because to me, my opinion, I felt like the WNBA was already kind of like, you know, needed a boost in just advertisement and just the games and stuff. I mean, it just needs something like a facelift to kind of get the program kind of going, because to me it's kind of behind. So I hate that this happened. Hopefully they can
right.
overcome it and come back, you know, better and stronger. Now, one good thing about it is I think the incoming class, the draft, I think it's going to be some good girls coming out.
Yeah.
Number one, Jasmine Jones, that played for me, she's going to be in it. So I think, that'll be a good thing. Yeah, so I'm curious to see how the WNBA is going to handle this upcoming season.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I do agree, because this was a pretty good class that was going to get drafted, because even last
mm-hmm.
year's draft class was good. This is going to be another good class. But, yeah, I'm a fan of the WNBA. I'm a fan of women's college basketball. And I just, right. I wish, for one, I wish the sports outlets would cover it more. I hear a lot of people talking about what we should do for women's basketball, but even those with platforms to talk about it don't talk about it. And so I just kind of oxymoron that. So, but yeah, it's tough too.
When they play the games, like this time of the year, you know, in my opinion, people travel a lot of stuff. They're not really home sitting in front of a TV. So I think that kind of impacts them. But then you think about it, they can't play during the time the men play because they share gyms. So it's, I don't know. It's just something they got to think about.
Yeah. And hopefully the change from coronavirus is an improvement on the game and the visibility of the game rather than something that's a detriment to it.
So, I agree.
So to get back to this past season, what was your fondest memory of this past season and what do you think made that moment that fond special moment?
Yeah, I would have to say it was the game before we went to state. We were in Jacksonville. And we played University Christian. University Christian was ranked number one in the class at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we kind of were the underdogs just coming in with the record we had versus theirs. But I just knew it. I would tell my assistant coach, I was like, no, they just don't know my team. Like, they're looking at the record. They're looking at our height. But I'm telling you, I was like, we're going to beat them. And so he was like, yeah, he agreed too. And when we played that game, the girls was just on fire. Like, they started all from the tip, all the way to the end. Just, they played an excellent game. I wish I recorded that game because I want to see it. I mean, they played a phenomenal game. I mean, we came to their place and just shot them. The crowd was silent. Like, they played very well. And one part of that game that I will never forget was when one of the girls that won first team, Letitia Taylor, she got in foul trouble, and I called a timeout, and I was like, look, no, this is right before the third quarter, coming after halftime. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I was like, look, you probably can't go in right now because you got three fouls. And she said, Coach, I don't care. She was like, as long as we win, it don't matter to me. And I was like, wow, like, you know, that was big for her to say because she was one of the starters, and she was like, it don't matter.
Right.
As long as we win, I don't care how many minutes I get. And I think that set us home with the rest of the girls, and, I mean, they just played phenomenal that game. That was a great game.
That's what I say. The name of the opponent again.
University Christian out of Jacksonville.
Okay. And winning this game sent you to the state championship game.
No, sent us to the state semifinals game.
Okay. State semifinals. All right. And so, who did you have to beat to get to the state championship game?
Keswick Christian, we beat them. I think we played them that Tuesday, if I remember correctly. Tuesday or Wednesday, and then for the championship game, we played Florida Prep. Now, Florida Prep was a really good team. I mean, they were huge. I mean, they had foreigners on the team. Those girls were pretty big and skilled.
Right. But hey, y'all coming back, and y'all gonna beat them. Because I mean, you got something special over there that you're cooking up, and they can bring in these other teams can bring in players that they want to bring in, but it's something about that chemistry that you're cooking up over there. So you're definitely going to be back because your girls going to want it. They have that winner's mentality. They understand winning. They understand losing, and they understand what it takes to get there. So you're definitely going to be back.
Yes, I appreciate it.
So, you know, like we've been talking, every team that you coach thus far has had a successful season. I don't think you've had a losing season as a head coach. And from my memories, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you've had a losing season. And so,
no, I haven't.
And so, for this particular year, what was the secret to this year's success, and how can you take this year's success and use that momentum moving into next year to make sure we have success next year?
I think the secret is, from a coaching standpoint, is to just ride the wave. And when I say ride the wave, like, you can't look at how it looked like in October, November, and you almost can't look at how it looks in December. But when it gets to like January, February, if you're peaking at the right time or you're making strides, then that's when you know, like, okay, you have something special. But in order for it to peak in January or February, you have to, you know, trust the process through those early months, because it's not going to always look like how it's going to look at the end. So that for coaches, I would say they would definitely have to do that. Keep implementing your schemes, keep implementing your drills and your processes and stuff, and it'll pay off at the end. And they got to understand that once everybody understands their role, then that's going to take you off, because if players don't understand their role, then you have people doing things that they shouldn't be doing, and it can kind of have a domino effect on the team. So that's very important that you get the girls or boys to understand their roles and how they can impact the team.
Right, right. Now that is important. That's definitely important. So I kind of ask this question a lot with you, but I'm always curious about it, because every season is a successful season. So not just based off of this year's success, but success in the past, have you had colleges or other high schools or even other programs and other realms contacting you about either becoming their head coach or becoming part of the staff?
Yes, I've had some. I've had other high schools. I've had talks of colleges, but nothing like, you know, written out. But I've had talks about it and conversations about it with other colleges, but nothing concrete. But I just feel like, you know, eventually, yes, I do want to coach at the next level. And I just feel like when it's time, you know, God will allow it to happen. But in the meantime, I'm just trying to get better each year, each season, and just to continue to remain humble and just know where all my help comes from. But at the same time, just kind of be the best version of myself, not trying to be like anybody else or anybody else's program, but just kind of be the best version of myself.
Right. Now, I definitely agree. But I also feel like with your resume, because clearly you know what you're doing, and not to be braggadocious and not to be arrogant, but with your resume, you have some kind of leverage to be able to dictate your terms. And so if you do choose to move on, it'll be you moving on to somewhere that's totally comfortable, totally that makes sense, that's a good fit because of the leverage that you have, rather than somebody who wants to coach at that level but doesn't have the actual resume that you have. So
you're right. I'm happy you said it that way, because this things I have kind of like not did because of I just felt like it wasn't a good fit for me. A lot of things I kind of overlooked or kind of let pass me because I just, you know, it's some people look at it as, oh, just get into college coaching regardless of how you get there. That's not kind of how I want to do it. Because I don't want to get in there and it's not a good fit or it's just not what I want. It needs to be something that I feel like I can develop from at the same time, get better, you know what I'm saying, with the players and coaching.
Right, right. Yeah, because chemistry and relationship and all that matters. Coaching matters. There's no, like, even, like, at my job and when 9 to 5s, you got to go sit down. They're always talking about culture. The same thing is in sports. If the culture isn't there, because it starts from the head office down to the last player on the bench. The culture has to be there. If it's not there, it's not going to work.
Exactly.
You know, our last question. Looking back over this season, looking at your accomplishments, if you could, like, you Erica, at this point, if you could go back to yourself at the beginning of the season and give yourself a piece of advice, knowing, you know, being able to see you right now, being able to see everything that you've gone through, if you could go back and give yourself a piece of advice at the beginning of the season, something that you know you probably didn't know at the beginning of the season, what would that piece of advice be?
That's a good question. Seeing what I know now and how it ended, if I had to go back, I would probably won't be so hard on myself, and that's, I don't know if that'll even change, but just won't be so hard on myself, because, like, yes, I understand that it's a process. Yes, I understand that you have to let things develop, but at the same time, you're still human and you're competitive. So it's like, and I have to remind myself this every year, when I think it should make the turn, sometimes it doesn't. When I say make the turn, like when you start seeing how it's supposed to look. It might not happen when I want it to. So I think right. in the season, I was like, okay, now we should be making a turn. Okay, no, now this year we're making a turn. And sometimes it didn't happen until later on. So that's just something I have to work on every year, beginning of the season, just understanding to keep doing what you're doing. And eventually it'll pop off. It'll make the turn when it's time. But like I said, that I don't know if I'm going to change that at all, because that's just something I got to work on.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I get you, because I myself, I'm hard on myself. I'm probably my biggest critic of all.
Mm-hmm.
So I do get that. That is a process of not just getting so up on yourself and just beating
right.
yourself up like that. Yeah, but it's just amazing to be able to witness what you are doing with those young ladies. You're definitely changing lives. So and you said young lady Jasmine she's in this upcoming WNBA draft, correct?
Correct. Yep, she is. Right. She'll be leaving Louisville, so I'm curious to see where she's gonna go. And you know, she'll be the first player I've ever coached to make it to a WNBA.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure I have many more to come, but she'll be the first one. So
how does that feel?
I know
like,
she's excited.
How does that
I don't know. I mean, that's crazy, because like I always say, I never thought I'd be in this position. But yeah, she would be the first player I've coached to make it.
That's incredible. That is huge. I mean, mm-hmm. You changing lives over there at FAMU High through the sport of basketball. I know a lot of people who, in different realms, they only look at sports one way. And they don't necessarily mm-hmm. see how sports changes lives if done correctly. And that's one of the reasons why sports is so big here in America, is you have a lot of kids who see that I can use my athletic abilities to change the fortunes of myself and my families. But then they get to a coach like yourself, and you remind them that the athlete is only a part of them, and you help them discover the whole human that they are. And to me, That's the mark of great coaching, like to be able to not just get the best of them on the court, but getting the best of them off the court in life. And if you're doing that, then you're definitely a great coach, and you are definitely a great coach.
I appreciate it. I'm happy you talked about that, because coming up, I think on the 19th, they're going to do the story with the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm ready to see that, because I've seen clips of it, and they talked about how Phil Jackson was able to kind of like get the team to buy into his triangle offense. I mean, because anybody that watched the Bulls at that time knew the team was Michael Jordan's team, but how Phil Jackson was able to get everybody else to buy in and still feel like they were a part of that team. And if you can recall some of the games, Michael Jordan didn't shoot the last shot all the time. You had John Paxson to do it. You had Steve Kerr to do it. And then you know, Scottie Pippen played a major role as well. So it kind of get the way Phil kind of got everybody involved like that. To me, it's just remarkable. So I'm ready to see how he did that. And like you said, coaching is just not about what you do on the court. They said, like, he would take them to do yoga and stuff. They would do, like, different things away from the court. So by the time they got back to the court, they were ready to go. So I'm excited to see just how Phil Jackson was able to develop the championship teams that he did.
Right, right. Once again, my listeners, this is Miss Erica Cromarty, the coach of the FAMU High DRS girls basketball team, three-time state champion, three-time coach of the year, gone to the state tournament at least 5 years in a row, is developing great young ladies. And so I'm definitely happy to have her on our podcast. How can people get in contact with you if they want to learn more, or somebody want to interview you or something? How can they get in contact with you?
I have different ways they can do. On Twitter is at Coach Crow, CRO at FAMUDRS, and then my email address is Erica ERICKA.Cromarty CROMARTIE at FAMU.EDU. And then I'm on Facebook as well, Erica Cromarty. That's my name on Facebook. So, I mean, there's different ways they can contact me, and I'll be more than happy to do an interview or anything.
Right,
so come and speak.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I'm for it.
There you go. There you go. So all my listeners, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend. We got greatness going on over here. So I appreciate you, Eric. I ain't going to hold you up because it's a lot going on today that's not really going on, but stuff going on because we can't really leave the house, but stuff's still going on. So definitely
and as
appreciate
always,
you.
I appreciate you, Joe, for having me on every year because you don't have to do that. So I appreciate you for doing that.
No problem. Like I said, I feel like I'm doing my part in being able to chronicle a lot of things that you have going on, and I'm gonna continue to do my part, and we're gonna continue to stay in here. And you know, we might have you back on again this year, but if not, we definitely gonna look forward to next year because there's a lot going on. But this is definitely a place where you got to come, use your voice, and speak out. So it's always going down. We're always gonna show you some love.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
No problem. I'm definitely going to talk to you later.
Okay. Thank you again.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Once again, my people, Miss Erica Cromartie. That young lady is good. That young lady is good. So, with that being said, it's time for my weekly rant. And I don't even know where to begin on this one, but we're going to go in. And however many angles we get, we get. So the headline is ex-NFL star, Mr. 2,000 yards in one season, Chris Johnson, accused allegedly, in murder for hire shootings. Dun, dun, dun.
What the hell is going on?
Right. So former NFL running back Chris Johnson is accused of paying a suspected gang member, for allegedly killing two men who shot him and killed his friend in 2015, according to court documents obtained by TMZ Sports. I got to get my hand on these documents. Johnson, who's 34 years old, has not been charged with the crime, but prosecutors believe he paid a noted Florida gang member named Dominic Bolden to kill the suspected gunman in a March 2015 drive-by shooting in Orlando. Johnson, a three-time Pro Bowler who last played in 2017 for Arizona, was shot in the shoulder during the Orlando shooting, but made a full recovery. The driver of Johnson's Jeep, Dricius Orico Johnson, I think that's how you say his name. I don't know. Died after being shot in the head. Police at the time said Johnson was uncooperative and investigators suspected the vehicle had been targeted. So law enforcement officials now believe the shooting was a gang-related murder attempt on Johnson, according to a new court document the gossip site obtained. After Johnson was shot, Bolden allegedly gunned down the suspected Orlando shooters in two separate incidents in January and July 2016. In return for the alleged actions, Johnson helped Bolden lead a drug trafficking organization and provided him funds and an individual who could supply him with narcotics for the drug trafficking organization, an informant told authorities. The alleged murder-for-hire scheme boosted Bolden's rank and rep within the drug trafficking organization, ultimately making him its de facto leader, the informant said. Johnson tweeted fake false news on Thursday afternoon, and a rep for Johnson earlier denied the allegations. There's no validity to any of these accusations, Johnson's rep told TMZ. Johnson spent one ill-fated season with the Jets in 2014, team cut ties, whatever. Now, wow, if this is true, boy, what the hell? Wow. Hey, man, come on now. So, first of all, let me start here. We all know ain't no real gangsters in the black community. We all know that. There are no real gangsters in the black community as long as people like George Zimmerman and all these white folk who kill black folk and get away with it and just can walk around and don't nothing happen to them. So all these so-called killers that be killing each other. See, black people be gangster against black people, but black people don't be gangster against non-black people. So ain't no real gangsters in the black community. So let me start with that foundation now and build upon that foundation, my brother, because ain't no real gangsters in the black community as long as George Zimmerman and these other white people will be killing black people still walking around. Now that that has been said, if Chris Johnson is truly caught up into this, brother, you have been one of the biggest waste of talent and fame and just that platform in the history of sports. If this is how you're going out, I just hope this ain't true for Chris Johnson. I hope it ain't true, but I don't have no proof to prove whether it is or it ain't. But we just hope this ain't true for Chris Johnson, because if this is true, this is one of the biggest waste of talent and being successful in the history of sports and mankind for Chris Johnson. One of the greatest fall-offs of all time. Now, one of the things is he's not been arrested. It's only accusations at this point. Now, me being me, I hope it ain't true. I'm just saying, I'm gonna be real. I hope it ain't true. But if it is true, boy, you stupid. If it is true, you is stupid, and everybody else involved in this is stupid. If it is true. Now, if your homeboy, Dominic Bolden seemed like he want to be Buns from Belly, right? That's what it looked like. He want to be Buns from Belly. He want to be Tommy. What did I tell Tommy about this? So I don't know who Dominic Bolden is. I know George Zimmerman is still alive, so Dominic Bolden, you can't be that gangster because George Zimmerman is still alive. But from the way they're reading it, and I don't know a lot about Dominic Bolden, so I'm not going to try to stand on my square on this, but who knows? He may not have the same intentions in life or the same platform and setup that Chris Johnson had. So, and they may be homeboys going back from the days or whatever. But it's like, well, why are you hanging with this? Why are you friends with this buddy, Chris? Why y'all friends? What y'all need to be friends for, Chris? This buddy right here. This buddy right here may not have the best intentions for his life as a whole. So why are y'all friends, Chris? Come on, buddy. Right? Because he seemed like he's trying to be Frank Lucas. Dominic Bolden, from the reading, seemed like he wanted to be Frank Lucas. And Chris Johnson, from the reading, I don't know who you trying to be. I don't know which gangster in the movie you trying to be, but this is stupid. This is stupid. As talented as Chris Johnson is, why are you caught up in this gang-related craziness? As talented as you are, because now, if all of this is true, you stupid. You are a blithering idiot if this is stupid. You don't have to be caught up in street life. You don't have to traffic drugs. You don't have to do none of that. You've made millions in your life. You've made millions. What have you done with your money? What was going on in your life that you felt like you had to be part of the murder and drug gang? Talk to me, Chris. What's going on in your life that makes you feel like you need to be a part of the murder drug gang? Come on, bro, let me know. Murder, murder, kill, kill, bang, bang, shoot, shoot, bang, bang, skeet, skeet, right? So, buddy killed a couple folk. You put him down with some of that work, put him down with the connect, and next thing you know, he become the leader of the gang. Meanwhile, George Zimmerman is still alive. So I'm going to keep throwing that in there in case y'all keep forgetting that. Yeah, George Zimmerman and other white people who killed black people, they're still alive. But we got stuff like this with your boy Chris Johnson. And they out here gang, gang, blood, crip, whatever. I don't know what gang y'all part of. Or what, I don't even know if y'all part of a gang. Or y'all might just be a social club who go out and do some things there, right? Y'all might actually get together and play bingo. I don't know. But whatever happened to all of this, whatever happened to get Chris Johnson caught up in all of this, it sounds like it's stupid. And so that made me think Chris Johnson's stupid. And so, Chris Johnson, are you stupid? Because I don't think you stupid, but it leads me to say that you might be stupid if you caught up in stuff like this, which is stupid. Or is it that you're not stupid, but you just into some stupid stuff at a stupid time, which is stupid? Come on, man. Come on, bruh. We supposed to be trying to get out of this corona, and you over here trying to be gang, gang. You allegedly trying to be gang, gang member number one. I'm a kid, pop, 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 pop. Killer, pop, 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 pop. That's you. Come on, B. This don't make no sense, B. It don't make no sense at all, B. For you to be caught up in this, Chris Johnson. Gang member number one, gang, gang, pop, 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 boom, 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 ping, ping, ping. Come on, man. Y'all cats over here ain't talking about nothing, man. This is one of the dumbest stories I've read in my rant, man. Come on, man. Bruh. Stop being stupid, bruh. What you mean, bruh? She ain't nasty. So, hey, man, I don't know, man. This make me sad, too, on the inside. It make me sad that this crazy shit is going on like that, too, man. It make me sad on the inside that somebody who have the platforms and the connections and stuff that Chris Johnson have to be caught up in some craziness like this, man. It's stupid. Hey, man, look, man. You don't have to be caught up in nigga stuff to get money. There are plenty of legal ways to get money. Trust me, believe me, I'm talking my way. I'm gonna talk my way into multi-millions of dollars. I'm talking my way into multi-million dollars. Being able to use my voice, my ability to interview people, my ability to give information, to teach and all that stuff. I'm talking my way into millions of dollars. There's so many ways you can do stuff. So many ways you can do stuff without doing the crazy stuff, man. That sounds like that wild South Florida stuff, man. That wild Florida stuff, man. I'm going to scam my way and drug and kill my way into my knees. Like, come on, man. You know what that sounds like, man? That's crazy. Murder for hire stuff and selling drugs and all this. Boy, if all of this is true, Chris Johnson, boy, everything you work for is in jeopardy. If this is true, everything you work for is in jeopardy, which is fucking stupid, B. It's stupid. Come on, man. It's stupid. You ain't got to be stupid to get money, man. It's money everywhere. You ain't got to be stupid to get money. Hey, man, but that's my time, man. You heard me? This is the Fix Sports Podcast, episode 10, I believe, maybe 11, 10 or 11, 1 or 2. I don't remember. Shit. It's corona time. We in this corona quarantine, day 799, and I can't feel my legs. But, hey, man, remember y'all can support the Fix Sports Podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/thefix. Visit our website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Remember, we have our Black Movie Playoff that's coming, that's happening real soon. So stay on board, stay abreast, stay in the loop. It's really going down in the South with the Freedom Train Network Black Movie Playoff. So we'll have more information for you. Remember, visit our social media, Instagram at Freedom Train Network, Facebook Freedom Train Network, Twitter, Freedom Train Net, YouTube, Freedom Train Network. So holler at us, man. It's really going down in the South. We got a lot of stuff coming on. And remember, every Monday you get the Fix Sports Podcast. Every Wednesday you get the Freedom Train Podcast Series, as well as Shelby's World. Every Thursday or Friday you get Lessons from the Screen with Patrick Irvin. Every Friday you do definitely get the Enigma September. He's going live from Facebook Live, so check out Enigma September with that. And like I said, we got this Black Movie Playoff coming to bust y'all right up in the face, man. So with that being said, man, two fingers in the air like a player, because, you know, we just up out of here because it's that Fix Sports Podcast, the realest and the blackest. Really going down to the side.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nassau. There's no one that can